brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
What's up, guys? How are you? Found your way to part two. We're about to be joined on the phone line here for the second part of our Demolition reunion with Bill Axe Edey, formerly known as the Masked Superstar, Demolition Axe, the Super Machine. I mean, he's done a lot of things within this industry, and we're excited to have him on. We're going to be joined on the phone by him in just a few minutes. First and foremost, I do want to let you guys know, for the third week in a row, World Wrestling Insanity, the book, is the top-ranked wrestling book on Amazon.com. Very excited about that, and I can't thank you guys enough for the success of everything that's actually happened with this book. And a lot of the responses that we're getting is actually what I was hoping for when we first started putting it together. One of the things that I wrote this book in mind with was not necessarily to write it towards the diehard fans, but more or less to write it towards the non-fans, people who have never watched wrestling before. But by the same token, I didn't want to give you guys a book that was just recounting everything that's happened in history. I wanted to make it something fun to read, and I wanted to give you guys some information that you haven't read before. So what ended up coming out of this book was the opportunity for hardcore longtime wrestling fans to read it, understand it, maybe get excited about what they're seeing, finding out some information they didn't know before. But also it's the kind of thing that when you're done with it, you could turn to that non-fan in your life, whether it's your mother or father, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, husband, wife, whoever it might be that wonders what the hell you're watching every Monday, you know, or on Friday for SmackDown, and turn out, why does that man have worms in his mouth? You know, you say, well, honey, take a look at this book, and I think it'll make some things a little crystal clearer for you. One of the funny things about this book, I have a lot of friends in my life who don't watch wrestling at all, know nothing about it. I actually have a friend of mine who 2 weeks ago I was telling him all about it, and I said, well, they do these storylines, they do this, and he's like, oh, so it is fake, right? I'm like, what, are you kidding me? It is fake, right? Yeah, I mean, you'd be amazed at some of the things that people outside of the wrestling bubble don't know about the industry or do know about the industry. A lot of them, I think everybody that I've run into, is surprised as hell that these guys are independently contracted non-employees. You know, they don't get health insurance, they don't get pension, they don't get things like that. A lot of people don't know about that. They don't realize that there's no wrestling union. A lot of people just assume there is. I mean, these guys are on television, they're on the USA Network, they're on Spike TV, you know, they're on TV, and they don't have unions, and that surprises a lot of people. So I think one of the things that I wanted to accomplish with this book is kind of reach out to that new audience, people who do not follow the business and don't know these things, and let them know what's going on within the wrestling community. Another thing about the book that I was very proud of is the fact that I do present you guys with my arguments and my proof to kind of back it up, but it's really up to you to make your decision about where WWE stands at the end. I think the things that they've done well, I give them credit for. The things that they don't do well, I don't give them credit for, as you know, you would expect. But also by reading through it, it's the kind of thing where you could read through all the pages, and at the end of it, if you still want to say to yourself, I don't buy it, then don't buy it. No one's going to make you feel stupid for not, you know, believing my opinions. They're my opinions, and if you know, you're not down with that, then yeah, you thought I was going to say two words. No, if you're not down with that, it's totally cool with me. Yeah, I mean, the book is really there just to present to you guys what I've observed, and over really that 8-9 month period that I was putting the thing together, I think in the end, once I was done with it, I was able to sit back, and I was really content. I was so happy with the way everything came out, especially, you know, the Triple H thing, which in many ways might be overkill. There's so much in there about Triple H, and even if Hunter is able to explain three-quarters of what I wrote in that book about him, the last quarter that's left over is still enough to be damning. So that's the kind of thing. People said he spent so much time on Triple H, and I think one of the reasons is everyone said, but we have no real look at Hunter's career. You know, we don't really know. I mean, he put people over, right? He had to have put people over. Well, you know, here you go. Here's my take on Triple H, you know, from beginning to end. If you have any questions, you can reference it. But again, within the book, if you do read it, I give Hunter credit for his strong points, and I give him credit for what he does well, which is very important to me. I didn't want this to be a slam book on WWE, no matter what you might hear from them. This is not a slam book on WWE. It's the kind of thing where I just simply wrote what I've observed, and if they didn't do the things that I wrote about, well then, you know, they could feel free to dispute that and say, well, we didn't do that, and we didn't do this, but everything I said they did, they did, and it's in the book, and it's right there. And yeah, I mean, when you couple that with some of the insider news and the wrestlers who participated in it, I think it came together. It was actually a really good product, and I'm very, very proud of it, and I'm really happy that you guys have enjoyed it, and the positive feedback that we've gotten has been terrific. I got a lot of appearances coming up. A lot of venues going to be reviewing World Wrestling Insanity, talking to me a little bit, so I'll keep you guys updated on the site about that. Right now, I think I'm on Banal of America. Tim Banal, for those of you guys who don't know, is the guy who does the Flash Player for this show. So if you're listening to this through that little Flash Player, you are on Banal of America already. Go to the homepage and listen to me again. Why wouldn't you want to listen to me again? I'm being interviewed by Tim Banal. Should go up the same day that this show goes up, so it should be up there right now. And Tim's a great guy. He has a conspiracy show that is just, you know, second to none, and we talked really, a really thorough interview. We talked for about over an hour about different things within the wrestling business, different things that I've observed, and I had a really good time. Tim's a good guy, and this show, honest to God, so much of it would not be possible without Tim Banal. So I do appreciate that, Tim, and I urge you guys to check out his site, and yeah, get into the conspiracies, because if you're not paranoid, then what's the point of being alive? That's the feeling of being alive, you know? Be paranoid. Just because you're paranoid, don't mean they're not after you. My little Kurt Cobain quote of the day. Now, guys, we are done pipping the book. Pipping the book. And we are going to bring on the second half of Demolition. Part two of our Demolition reunion. The guy's name, Bill Eadie. Demolition Axe, and we're going to have him on. So without further ado, let's cue him up on the phone line, and let's welcome Demolition Axe, Bill Eadie, to the show. Here we go.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
All right, guys, so here he is. Join me in welcoming him to the show. You might know him as the Masked Superstar. You might know him as one of the Machines. You might know him as Demolition Axe. His name is Bill Eadie. Bill, welcome to the show this week.
How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to have you on. We actually had Barry Darso on in part one, and we talked a little bit about the Demolition gimmick, which actually kind of transcends many wrestling fans' memories of the business. Now, you actually were the brains behind that whole gimmick, is that correct?
Well, two of us were. Randy Colley, and he was the original Smash, and myself came up with the idea. We toyed around with a lot of different aspects, but Randy and I basically put it together, yes.
Yeah, actually, when we had Smash on, we had talked to him about replacing Randy in Demolition. What were some of the reasons for that, and what led to bringing in Barry Darso in as the new
Randy
Smash?
Randy was only with me for 2 days, two shows. We had two events in the Meadowlands, and I believe the other show was Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, TV tapings, and everybody recognized him, of course, so you know, I felt that it wasn't going to work if they knew who he was, but the other characters are Moondog, so he graciously stepped aside and let me choose another partner.
And what kind of led to choosing Barry? What was it about him that stood out as the perfect Smash?
Well, I had interviewed a number of people, probably a dozen, and one of them was that, you know, he was eager, he was a new face, and he was willing to listen, and he wanted to take another step. This was going to be a good step for him.
Do you think that nowadays tag team wrestling has kind of changed to the point where the psychology of what happens in the ring is being downplayed, so that tag team wrestling has kind of maybe lost a step or two?
Well, it's lost a step or two maybe with the promoters and a lot of the individual bookers. They seem to be featuring single stars, but as you know, and I think the fans would cooperate, that the tag team wrestling aspect is going to give you a lot more excitement and longevity. You're going to have a longer career too.
It kind of gives you the opportunity for guys that might not be the biggest stars in singles competition to kind of get over as something on the card.
Well, you know, through the years you've had a lot of top single stars become tag team individuals. I mean, in most of my career, as you know from the other characters, was singles, but I enjoyed the tag teams. You know, I enjoyed the character. But as far as emphasis, I don't think I think you're absolutely right. There's no emphasis right now. I mean, I do a lot of Legends events, and one of the things that they talk about, other than the fact that they don't like what they see, is the fact that they've downplayed tag teams. And a lot of these Legends events, I mean, the Rock and Roll and the Midnight Express and all these guys are still very popular, and it's for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it comes down to promoters or maybe even WWE, we could just say, desiring to make single stars so they don't really have the patience to let a tag team play out before splitting them up and seeing if they can make, kind of split their money in half and see if they can make more that way?
Well, I honestly couldn't say. I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't watched the television program for a number of years, not because I don't like wrestling, it's because I just have to get to bed early. I've got to get up early in the morning, so 9 o'clock, 9:15 is my bedtime. So
I understand that.
I don't. A lot of people say, "What do you think of this guy? What do you think of that guy?" And I honestly couldn't make a comment because I haven't seen him wrestle.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you: coming up in the business, who are some of your influences that you think that influence your style as both a superstar and as Demolition X?
Well, I have to give a lot of my credit initially to Boris Malenko because he was my first manager as a superstar, and he had great psychology. He emphasized the interviews, and he didn't interfere in the matches. I mean, today you see the managers, and everything's based on focusing the attention on them.
Mm-hmm.
Rightly so, if you don't have a guy in the ring that can perform. But
yep.
If you got somebody that's in the ring and it's capable, then you're just a slight distraction once in a while. Become a major distraction all the time. It's just like, the parent that hollers all the time and the kids just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened. And I think that, of course, he was an influence. And my first mentor, the guy that broke me in, was Guido Mongol. So both of those guys were old school, and they emphasize knowing your craft. And I think that's a big disadvantage today. Guys get in the ring, and they think just because they look good in the mirror that they're going to be a top professional wrestler. Well, that's the cookie cutter mentality that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to perform, because if you look back years ago, you had big guys, small guys, fat guys, thin guys, and you had characters. Now you got weightlifters.
Yeah.
And just because you look good doesn't mean you wrestle good.
It still takes talent and a certain amount of athleticism. Yeah.
And one thing that I always prided myself in is being a sponge in the business. Eliminating the things I couldn't do well, emphasizing the things I could do well, and took pride in my interviews, because if you don't express yourself, and Malenko was instrumental in that, he said the longest lasting television programs and radio programs, for that matter, are talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to express yourself. People want to know who you are. And there's been some successful individuals without doing interviews. Snuka, a couple, very few, but that's based on superior talent.
Yeah.
But basically, you've got to be able to express yourself. And I think, Barry and myself both did that well. Fuji was kind enough to step back, and he knew the business, and he stuck his nose in when it was appropriate and kept his nose out when it wasn't.
So I was going to say, actually, you guys had a very unique relationship with Mr. Fuji as your manager, because he wasn't necessarily there as a mouthpiece. You still did most of the talking when he was there.
Yeah.
And making it actually something that I noticed when you guys had him as your manager that I thought was a great move was they put him in the face paint. And it kind of differentiated the fact that, it's kind of a new Mr. Fuji. He changed his name to Master Fuji
right. And
things like that. I mean, that was, in my opinion, a situation where,
you
use your
manager. Take credit for that. I'll give Vince credit for that. But I don't know if it was credit or he was trying to pull a cruel joke on Fuji, but it got on.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was trying to say, they've done a number of things through the years, you can see. But it turned out to be a positive. And, the fans just liked us. They liked us if we were the bad guys. They liked us when we were the good guys. And they liked us when we were riding the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's out of respect for our ability. I'm just not blowing smoke. I just think that the fans recognized that we could perform. We tried to do our best all the time. Some people said we copied, but you know, if one guy does a turnbuckle, somebody's going to do a turnbuckle. We never tried to copy Road Warriors or Powers of Pain, although we got accused of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we ended up with our own identity, and over the years, it's we must have done something right, I believe, because people still recognize us.
See, it's I was talking to Barry about when the Road Warriors actually came into the company, and it kind of seemed like they were having a hard time getting over with the WWF fans.
Yeah.
You guys were solidly over with the WWF fans.
I think it's you know, if you remember years ago, there was an Ivan Putski, and then there was an Igor.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivan Putski was popular in one area, and Igor was popular in another. And when their paths crossed, then they became, you know, it became a little confusing. And the same thing happened with us. Road Warriors were, I believe, in WCW and AWA, and we had already been established in the WWF area. Well, when they came in, they were trying to copy us, according to fans.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, I think, if we'd have gone to the other areas, we'd have been trying to copy them. And I don't think it was, we were similar teams, but we were dissimilar also. I think our success was that we tried to wrestle with everybody, and we had competitive matches with everybody. Of course there's going to be similarities. There's similarities between the Midnight Express and the Rockers and the Fantastics. And so there's only so many things you can do. You can only take a turnbuckle, a hip toss, an arm drag, so there's going to be overlay.
Absolutely. Well, we had brought up when they had you guys wearing the masks for, I think it was like 2 weeks, when they had you come out, and that was, as Barry had said, that was, I guess, with the Road Warriors on their way in or something like that, trying to differentiate.
Well, I think that was, I think they were having a little difficulty overcoming us, and Vince perhaps maybe took a suggestion. I don't know. I wasn't privy to the information.
Do you think?
I thought it was a slap in our face, and the people didn't react to it too.
Absolutely. I mean, do you think it was the kind of situation where maybe if you guys had been used as the baby faces and the Road Warriors maybe came in as heels, it might have worked a little bit better?
Well, I think so, but I don't know if they wanted to do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
I've been asked a number of times. The matches should have been good matches, but in my opinion, I don't know what Barry said. In my opinion, we never had a good match with them.
Yeah, he had said that it wasn't his favorite.
The chemistry wasn't there, and Barry's good friends with him, and I was better friends with Hawk, and we just sat down sometimes, and it just never worked, and I think they were pushing too much. They were the baby faces.
Mm-hmm.
They should have trusted us, and maybe they didn't, but, you know, we weren't trying to take anything. But the matches, in my estimation, didn't stink. They weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fans realized that. And it was unfortunate because, I mean, both teams could have survived. But, some things they never worked. Doesn't mean we weren't friends, and doesn't mean we were trying to cut each other's throat. It just didn't work.
Absolutely. What was kind of bizarre about it, I think, was that so many people were looking forward to that match for years, and then once they had come in, you guys had Crush, and then they had the Ultimate Warrior for most of the matches. It seemed like a bit much.
Well, you remember years ago when they wanted to see, I think it was Hogan and Flair.
Mm-hmm.
Those matches were no good.
Yeah.
You know, too many people like both characters, so you have to have a good guy and a bad guy. It's just basic 101. And there was too many Demolition fans, and evidently there was a push on their side to overcome that. You can't. You just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have been the same if we'd have gone in another territory and tried to do the same thing to them. But thank God it didn't last too long. I was on my way out at that time anyway, so. It just didn't. It wasn't a good feeling.
I understand that. I mean, now, right now, I mean, we were talking before with Barry about the resurgence in WWE now of legends, and they have the 24/7 and the action figures and things like that. Any chance that we would see you as a part of any of that down the line? I mean, would you ever be a part of anything WWE-oriented again,
well,
do you think?
I'll never say never.
Mm-hmm.
I'm smart enough to realize this is a business, and I never took anything personal.
Mm-hmm.
My moves and Vince's moves and everybody's moves are based on business. I mean, I don't hold any grudges against the WWE, WWF, whatever it's called now.
Mm-hmm.
you never say never. As a matter of fact, I was contacted and signed an agreement with Jack Specific for the Legends dolls.
Oh, great.
Who knows what's in store? You know, I bumped into Atlas and all those guys who never thought that they'd never be in the Hall of Fame, and they says, well, never say never. And I said, I learned that years ago, my friend.
Yeah, I think Bret Hart this year shocked a lot of people. I think
they
left it open for him. I know you're on your way out, so I don't want to keep you too much longer. Before I let you go, I know I had actually read online that you have a book coming out next year.
Well, we haven't signed the agreement yet. I'm going to co-author it with a good friend of mine, Rich Tate.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you can hear me over this.
Oh, sure, I hear you.
From GeorgiaWrestling.com. And we're in the process now of finalizing the contract agreement. So he said it would probably take about a year, which may correspond with the dolls coming out, because they're supposed to be out around the first quarter.
Oh, terrific. Year. Well, you know, I mean, when you get everything together, feel free. We'll definitely plug it up here on the site for you. Before I let you go, all the fans out there who have remembered Demolition, remember the Masked Superstar, what do you have to say to all of them who have been supporting you for years?
Well, I really do appreciate it. I've had an opportunity to be at a lot of Legends events, and if I'm there, if I'm scheduled, you see my name on the card, please come down and say hello. It's a pleasure. You guys remember my matches and my career much better than I do. I tell everybody that I don't have full-blown Alzheimer's, but I do suffer from part-timers.
Nice one. I like that. All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much for appearing on the show.
My wife
this week.
Says meanness.
What's that?
My wife adds a little bit of meanness.
Well, you can put it all together, and it equals one good attitude, man.
That's right.
Beautiful. Bill, thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone on that, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Robert Knockers.
What? What? Fear is only a four-letter word.
The world's largest love machine, Viscera.
Woo! As voted by you, the readers of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
Hey, what happened?
Take two. So yeah, you see in double, well, good for you, you're not drunk. No. You're just watching Monday Night Raw, and you're watching the latest in the installment of Kane's Life is Ridiculous. Care of WWE. That's right, this week's Moment of Insanity is the other Kane coming out and confronting the original Kane, or the bald Kane, the masked Kane, and the bald Kane. For those of you guys who missed Raw, quick background on the situation. For the last few weeks, Kane has been hearing voices in his head that we all get to hear too, because we are all in his head, or something. I don't know what the rationale is. But what will happen is all of a sudden Kane will grab his head, hold on to it like he has a migraine, and you know, you hear, May 19th, Kane, it's all going to happen again. He's like, oh no, it's May 19th, it's going to happen again. Well, May 19th came, and May 19th went, and no one really gave a damn about May 19th. In fact, the whole idea of May 19th was to sell Kane's movie, which did alright, did respectable enough, didn't by no means probably made anybody there really all that happy about the success of it. So May 19th was here, and then it was gone, and that was that. We found out what May 19th meant. It meant that Kane's parents were killed on May 19th. And for those of you guys keeping score, Kane's parents were killed in a fire set by his brother, The Undertaker, who originally denied it and ended up admitting to it a little while later when managed by Paul Bearer, but no one really made a big deal out of it. And here's the kicker. Kane was in the house of the burning. In fact, his original gimmick was based on being burned from that fire that, I guess, occurred on May 19th. And then what ends up happening? Well, he's not burned anymore. No one really talks about that all that much. Making things even stranger is that he's all broken up over the death of his parents on May 19th, yet when he first debuted in WWE, he had them dug up, brought them to Raw, and then chokeslammed his brother onto their corpses within the casket. You guys remember that? I remember that. That was pretty sick. All right, anyway, Kane continues back and forth to, I love my dead parents, I don't love my dead parents, I'm burned, I'm not burned, I like fire, I don't like fire, I like hair, I don't like hair, whatever he likes to do today. So, Kane's new situation now, May 19th is over, yet he's still hearing these voices. And in fact, on the Titantron, his mask is still spinning around. Hasn't worn the mask in a few years, ever since Triple H took it away, because he's Triple H and that's what he does. So Kane's standing there in the ring. He's about to beat Shelton Benjamin for the Intercontinental title. And all of a sudden, his music hits. And the little mask pops up on the Titantron. And out comes another Kane. A little different here. Very obvious it wasn't Kane. The guy had huge hair. I guess it was a wig, but it was about three times the size of the hair that Kane ever had. He looked like a jerry-curled kind of Gene Simmons, you know, like... Yeah, that's what it kind of reminded me of. Anyway, comes out, it's the freaking Deacon is the guy's name who's playing the character. Deacon DeVille is under the mask. Comes out, stares Kane down, choke slams him, nearly falls when he goes to choke slam him, and then hits the pyro, and that's it. So that's the gimmick, that's the angle, that's the storyline. It's Kane versus Kane, and where do we go from here? Okay, so let's talk, guys. First and foremost, one of the worst... storyline, I don't say storylines because the storyline wasn't that bad, but one of the worst matches and payoffs in history of WWF was Undertaker against Underfaker at SummerSlam 94. Same exact situation, a little bit different. Undertaker was off of TV for a while. Ted DiBiase started going on TV saying that he had found him and he was bringing him back. Paul Bearer then came out and said, "I'll bring him back, the Undertaker, not you!" And, you know, who's got the Undertaker, who doesn't? And DiBiase debuts the Undertaker. It looked a lot like him. It was Brian Lee, Primetime Brian Lee. You could tell they kind of kept his hair down in front of his face. There was actually one match where he pinned a jobber and then flipped his hair back, and you could tell blatantly that it wasn't The Undertaker. It was Brian Lee. Other drawback, when the two of them finally did meet in the ring, you could see that Brian Lee was considerably shorter than The Undertaker. Plus, the two of them had very slow-moving styles. You know, Undertaker plays the monster gimmick. So, the match was terrible. It was actually so bad that I even brought it up in World Wrestling Insanity the Book, you know, which focuses on the last 4 years, but this was so monumental that it got a mention as something that was bad. Even during the match, they even had to mention that the audience wasn't reacting. They said, "The audience is stunned silent." Sounds good to me. Good way to go about that. Alright, so anyway, they did this angle already, and it bombed out of the building. Will Kane versus Kane be the same thing? Well, let's think about it. First and foremost, Kane has not been off of TV prior to this feud like The Undertaker was with his feud. So the fans are a little more emotionally invested within Kane and his character. So that helps him out there. Also, and this is just my opinion, you can come down on me, I think Glenn Jacobs as a performer, see, I don't want to cut down The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, and his in-ring ability, because I'm not saying that. Undertaker's gimmick in 1994 stopped him from really being able to do too much. He got beat up, he sat up, he walked slowly, he stalked people. It was boring. Kane isn't like that. Kane is a lot faster as far as how his character can be portrayed. Whether or not Undertaker can do cartwheels, I don't know. I don't care. He wasn't doing him in 94, so his match was boring. Kane, on the other hand, moves around the ring a lot, tries to give better matches than The Undertaker's gimmick used to be, so maybe that could work. Here's where the gimmick will be good, and here is where it will, what's the term I'm looking for? Suck. Here's the two things. First and foremost, this gimmick of the new mask Kane ends up being somebody who's messing with the bald Kane, trying to get inside of his head. That's cool. I'm down with that. Second scenario, something that I don't necessarily like, but I've heard around, and it would still be second best. Maybe it's another sibling. It's the same amount of time has now passed from when Undertaker debuted to when Kane showed up, and now Kane's debut to now, same amount of time, roughly about 7 years. Or was it 7 years? Well, around that, seven, I think it's like nine, whatever. All around the same kind of thing, same time period. It's been, you know, about 8 to 10 years since anybody's been from the Kane family on TV. So maybe it's a family member who's messing with him. Those two things, for the most part, will work. Here's where it's not going to work. If the new Kane is a part of the old Kane's soul that escaped and is now tormenting him, that's going to be really stupid, and I don't think people are going to like it. Now, here's the problem. Normally, you would never even think that that would be the scenario, because it makes no sense. Unfortunately, the way Kane's career goes, it makes
sense in his context. So you take that for what you will. I really hope there's something more to this. I hope it's not a hallucination that we see. I hope it's not a part of his soul. I hope it's not, an escaped memory of him. I hope it's none of that dumb stuff, honest to God. And I'll tell you why. I think this feud could be money if they do it right. I think if the new guy ends up being an evil Kane, who eventually ends up losing his own mask and goes on to his own thing as either a tormentor of the Big Red Machine or as a sibling of the Big Red Machine, that's cool. If he's a part of his brain spawned out into a new soul, I'm going to retch. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I mean, Katie Vick, I dealt with it. Lita, I dealt with it. Gene Snitsky, we dealt with it. We've dealt with all of Kane's silliness. It's time to give him something that he could really wrap his hands around and work with. And I think this feud has the potential to go either way. It could either be a really solid, memorable encounter, or it could be another ridiculous Kane afterthought, where we continue to be marveled over the fact that Glenn Jacobs can be put into these positions and continue to be a viable draw down the line. It continues to have fans and supporters. And I said this in my PW Insider Insanity Report a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again. If anybody else was put in the position that Kane has been put in so many times, they would have fallen on their face by now. They would be doing interviews with me and complaining about. I swear to God, if the guy who was playing Kane was Bobby Schmabby of, Trenton, New Jersey, if that was the guy who was playing the Kane character, he would have been gone so long ago and would have already been on Radio Free Insanity complaining about, Johnny Ace and Vince McMahon. There's something about Glenn Jacobs playing the character of Kane that he's able to take these storylines and these angles and not make them the most ridiculous things you ever saw. And really, we've got to applaud the guy for that. And I can't say it enough. I mean, I've said it a lot, but really, when you look back at how many insane things are done surrounding Kane's character and the fact that he has, persevered throughout all the years, you got to applaud the guy. I mean, really, we everyone says we're cynical, we're this, we're that, but really, join me, guys. Give him a round of applause for crying out loud. The guy has made a world of good things come out of a world of crap. So God bless him on that. You guys agree. Green Teabagger says, Kane original recipe in the ring. I'm about to win the Intercontinental title from Mama's Boy when Kane Extra Crispy comes down and chokeslams him is the moment of insanity. The crowd's reaction was the same as the home viewers, as was the same with the insanity boards. And there is a picture of a man's head exploding. So if you like to see that for whatever reason, then go check it out. Followed by a picture of a kitten in a sandwich with WTF written. And it says, especially for those that already know of Kane's former gimmick, Fake Diesel. See, that's another thing, too. Before playing Kane, not only was he playing Dr. Isaac Yankem, but he also was playing the Fake Diesel alongside the Fake Razor Ramon, who was Bogner, Big Titan back in the day. So, yeah. What else do we got, guys? Let's see. I'm seeing who else voted here. I mean, it's kind of split between this and the Leprechaun deal with Fit Finley, which is actually pretty crazy in and of its own right, but definitely this thing has just been nuts. Keevil says the two Canes is a moment of insanity on so many levels. First level, the hidden secret brother has a hidden secret brother. Secondly, that's a good point, actually, Keevil. Secondly, Kane has an interesting storyline. Thirdly, they tied a storyline to this intriguing onto the end of a forced movie tie-in storyline. Fourth, they had this good of a swerve at the end of the May 19th storyline, and last week all we got was, May 19th was the anniversary of the fire. The only thing that can make this any M.O.I.R., moment of insanity-er, is if the fake Kane was played by Diesel. That would be cool, Keeble. Unfortunately, Diesel is off in Orlando eating Chris Sabin and his friends. Otherwise, he would be there to probably do it and then probably get on the microphone and talk out of character and say he's too cool for the situation. But yeah, guys, there you have it. This week's moment of insanity, as if there was any doubt, was the Big Red Machine, Kane, meeting face-to-face with the Big Red Machine, Kane, center ring, and having a Big Red showdown. So, hooray! That does it for us this week, guys, here. Remember, voting starts now for next week's Moment of Insanity, so go ahead and vote away. I want to thank you guys for listening. Great show this week. More than happy about it. Don't forget, our guests don't stop. They're just going to keep coming to the show. We're going to have plenty of more people on. I have a lot of people lined up down the line, people who have been in the business in the past, people who are current stars today. So you guys got plenty to look forward to. Go out, pick up World Wrestling Insanity, the book. Buy it for your mother. Buy it for your father. Buy it for your girlfriend, wife, husband, boyfriend, pets, whoever is in your life that doesn't understand why you watch wrestling. Buy it for them and let them see why you watch wrestling and why you shake your head in confusion sometimes. So guys, until next week, my name is James Gutman, saying thank you so much for listening, and thank you for sharing my insanity. Be well.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.